Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Wednesday, August 22nd at 7 o'clock p.m. If you're not listening to the program at that particular date and time, then you're listening to a rebroadcast or a podcast and should not try calling in. However, at this time we are live and you can call us at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937 to become involved in our conversation. I'm Doubter 5, and usually we have the Wombat on the phone with us tonight, but Wombat can't make it tonight. So we have Deviation with us tonight. Deviation is one of the board members of the Atheist Society of Knoxville, and he'll be talking about several different topics today, including ASK and his deconversion and anything else he wants to talk about. This is our radio show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, holy books, and superstition. Let me turn off this noisemaker in the corner. There we go. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville. And if you, we'll be telling you about them and how you can connect with them after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show broadcasting right here in Texas, in Knoxville, and has been for over, well, I guess it's over 8 years now. Did you know that?
Yeah.
You did? Have you been on the show yet?
I have not been on the show yet.
Oh, well, you need to be on the show.
I've been invited several times, so maybe I'll make an appearance.
You're on the radio show. That's good.
First time.
That's a start. And we'll be talking about how you can listen to that a little bit later on as well. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here on this program, and generally on the station as they are in rotation. So tonight's topic, we're going to talk about, I guess, the incorporation of ASK.
Yeah, I have several things. First thing I'll get to is our local organization, which is the ASK, Atheist Society of Knoxville. Of course, it's founded by you 26 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Recently, been made a nonprofit, a 501c3, and working with local groups for local charities and secular voting. We do have that meetup, of course, weekly, Tuesdays, and you can find that information on our website. We'll get that information more after the break.
Okay, real good. I was just checking the sound. I'm not hearing that much from the system, and I'm not seeing much on the readout either, which has me kind of concerned. But how long have you been with ASK?
I moved to Knoxville, around 2014, but I started coming prior to that, I want to say around 2012, so around six years now. I've been coming to the meetup more regularly last year. I formed the board in April of this year, and once the board was formed, we took the organization, made it nonprofit, which is a huge step that we were excited about, to get more local community on board with some of the things we're working on and some of the projects we're working on.
What are the projects you're working on?
So the one of the primary ones, working with another group called Sunday Assembly Knoxville, and the project is called Our Ending Hunger Campaign. This information can be found on our website. I'll give more information after the break. And essentially, what we do is once we reach our target goal of $2,500, we're working with what's called the Outreach Program, and they will send enough ingredients for us to package 10,000 meals to distribute to the local food banks here in Knoxville to feed some of our hungry neighbors. Additionally, we have one of our other members that's regular, is heading up our local Secular America Votes. And so we're going to start pushing out here in the next couple months a huge drive to get some voters out there, hopefully in some of the secular community. But anyone who wants to vote, our goal is to get as many registered for this upcoming election.
Okay, I may have to ask you to get a little bit closer to your mic.
Sure.
Or pull the mic over to you. That'll work. You've often set up some booths. I know ASK has set up booths on the local Pride Parade. They've set up some talk to the public type of booths.
That's right. We've I think this is our second or third year boothing at Knox Pride, and each one has been a success. We've met a lot of people, a lot of great folks. We're looking to future tabling events and you know more of a ask an atheist kind of thing, just to start a conversation with the people here in Knoxville.
Well, as you should. I've been doing that kind of thing myself, but only whenever I get a wild hair, I'll go down to Market Square Mall, set up a booth, and just set out an atheist sign and just talk to people as they walk by. I think public outreach and public contact goes a long way to dispelling some of the myths that people have about atheists, and helps to give flesh out the image that they would have is and see us as normal people as we are. The only thing that we have different from the believer is that we don't happen to believe that the claims made about gods by any religion hold water. And until they can bring some evidence to the table, there's no reason to believe it, and we should withhold belief until that time.
Actually, you know, I actually did have a topic I brought with me that we'd discuss. And I was going to segue with that with basically, I don't know. And what I mean by that is how uncomfortable we have been as a species, as humans, of saying, I don't know. And as a result of that, through the ages, anything that was unexplained, mythicism took over.
Right.
Lightning, Zeus, yeah. And it extends until
like
today.
It would.
Mm-hmm. And it extends until today. And, of course, with many things that just kind of expand. And as scientific understanding has grown and our knowledge of the world has grown, that I don't know has shrunk. There's still some gaps in there, you know, like abiogenesis, you know, the true, you know, expansion of the universe, things, facts that we don't know. But what I pride myself in, and I know you yourself being an intellectual, we're comfortable saying, I don't know.
Right.
We don't have understanding scientific to make a proclamation. But the problem is that, especially with the religious or the theists, the hardcore theists, they do claim to know mm-hmm. without sufficient evidence.
Right.
And, you know, they'll argue the point that they have the knowledge and that because we don't, that their worldview is correct.
Right. Well, one thing you can say is, and this may catch a lot of people off guard, is feelings aren't facts. And knowing something because you had a feeling doesn't mean that the feeling is interpreted correctly. I mean, when you sit in church and your preacher tells you this good feeling that you have in yourself is Jesus moving in you, it may just be the fact that he's manipulated you emotionally to feel that way. One of the examples I like to bring up is, you've never seen the movie called Old Yeller?
Oh,
Have you?
I have. It's been several years.
Were you crying at the end?
Yeah, I wasn't old enough to actually probably understand the emotional bond.
In my generation, yeah, I was well old enough to listen to see it. But think about it, you're sitting in a chair, you're watching yourself, you're watching this movie, this experience that is presented to you in a way to manipulate your emotions to elicit a feeling at the end.
Sure.
And it's sorrow. There's a thing that preachers do called spiritual manipulation. If you look up that term on the internet, it'll get a lot more information about it. But they know how to manipulate you emotionally, just sitting in your pew chair there and you're listening to them talk, standing up occasionally, sitting down occasionally, singing songs that bring emotional responses, and then when they're ready, they'll start talking, and they'll bring that talking from a soft beginning all the way up to a crescendo that has you moved. And then they'll tell you that it's Christ moving in you, which you have no reason to doubt because you've heard it all your life. So, you know, feelings aren't facts is the main thing, the point I'm trying to get across.
Well, I was just at this last time that I had a discussion with, a very brief discussion with a gentleman earlier today who, on his second attempt to try to argue for, a creationist point of view versus, a creator being necessary. And the question he asked me was, well, if there wasn't a creator, then how did we get here? And he was just so uncomfortable with me being happy saying, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to, forego or withhold any kind of proclamation or, make any claim otherwise just because I don't have that knowledge or can't put in. And they're happy to do so,
Well, the thing about it, I don't know as an answer, is that it's perfectly good answer. I mean, either you know, or you claim to know, or you don't know, and it's most times it's the most honest answer you can give.
Sure,
it is a valid answer. I don't know. Like if you ask me right now if there's any gods of any kind out there in the universe, I have to say I don't know, because there might be one in the next cosmos over, 13 galaxies over. I don't know, but I don't believe in any because I haven't seen any proof, any evidence for a God.
Right.
And so I'm an agnostic, I don't know, atheist, I don't believe. There's two different questions you have to ask.
Right. There. I'm happy accepting that I can say I don't know when there is not sufficient scientific evidence for me to accept any kind of proposition, and I'm certainly not going to go the route of creating one just to fill in that gap, and it seems that especially today or, through history, but especially with this gentleman I have a conversation with, he was happy accepting because it provided an answer that he was seeking.
Right, sure.
And that's really all it took.
Well, it's an answer that he was looking for, that he was expecting. And when someone tells him that, yeah, that's God or that's Jesus doing that, what you feel, he's willing to just step on that and go for it. Did I ever tell you about the story about my mother?
You may have.
Stephanie, yes. It's in my book, and Stephanie read it last night. But the thing about it is, my mother used to tell me a story about how Jesus performed a miracle for her and saved her life. But when I got into the nuts and bolts of it, what happened was, in my estimation, was that she was a young girl in the 20s. In western Tennessee, very rural town where everybody was a Christian, went to church on Sunday. It was that kind of farming community. After church, the family and a lot of other families went down to the creek, and the girls, she was maybe 7 or 8, took off their little frock and jumped in the water and was swimming around. Well, my mom got a cramp, and she was really sure that she was going to die. She was drowning. But her foot hit a root or some kind of branch underwater, and she was able to push herself up long enough to get some water and catch clothes that the people on the shore were trying to reach her with and bring her to the shore. Of course, when she got to the shore, she told them that her foot had hit a root. But the thing about it is, what would you say if you were a preacher?
Right, well, that was God. God was with you.
There's no accidents. There are no accidents. Jesus was under the water with you, and he put your foot on that root and helped you out.
The whole footprint's in the sand.
Right, right. Yeah. And, of course, everybody in the community supported his answer. And everybody after that, have supported the concept that Jesus was a protective angel that would watch over you for no matter what.
That's a good segue to special pleading, because they're so delighted to accept the good positive stories, but when there are bad things, the problem of evil, when there are those things, they either dismiss that as either prayer, mysterious ways, he needed another angel. They're happy to cherry pick and have the special, the ones that support and push that God is with you and God answers prayers when the positive things occur. However, when the person they're praying for does die, or you know, unfortunate accident does kill two people in a car accident.
Right.
There's no, it was God's will at that point. You know, it was they're happy to cherry pick and just to push that. It's just you see that a lot.
Well, yeah, it's special pleading. It's special compartmentalizing of their thoughts, because God can do no wrong. I mean, there's always a way to make what happens to you, no matter what, something beneficial to either you or your family or society at large. You know, she didn't die because it was a bad thing. She died as an example to us, you know, not to do the stuff that she did. You know, so God is good no matter what happens, whether he just needs another angel or it's just her time or whatever. It's just, there is no way that God can lose on any of these conversations.
Right.
How do you... You were born and raised in a religious family, I assume.
So I was. And this, once I go through this, it's going to be another great segue into what I want to talk about next. But yes, so when... By the time I was 8 or 9, I was going to a Baptist church in Indiana. And we did the whole church, church camp thing. I was into it. Not so much on the spiritual level. It was just more like it was just expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think any time through my life was I... You know, I felt spiritually powerful or felt the love of Jesus, but I had the belief because it was expected of me. And so,
sure.
As I got older, I moved to Texas with my dad, and his wife at the time was a Jehovah's Witness. And the agreement for me coming down there and staying there was that I would go to the meetings with them and, you know, go to the studies.
Obviously, to be able to convert you.
And so I went, and they hammered it hard, and they really do. They'll reach you every night. There were 3 or 4 meetings a week when it, you know, basically what you would call church, they would call meetings, and, you know, an hour on, you know, 2 hours on Thursday, 2 hours on Sunday, 1 on Saturday, you know, book reading. It was a lot. It took a lot. And I'm at this time, 13, 14-year-old, you know, adolescent.
Wow.
Trying to keep me in, you know, my attention that long is already a problem. But I kind of bought into it a little bit, you know, because they would, at the time, I still believed that the Bible was the true inspired word of God, and they had always made it a point to reference everything they said by pointing and reading the scripture. But when I got older, what ultimately, and like I said, I'd never really into it spiritually. I'd never got to the point where, you know, I felt the love of Jesus, or I was kind of on a level, even somewhat mocked, not necessarily mocked, those people, but just never understood how they could feel they did, and why didn't I feel that, why didn't I accept,
sure,
what I had, why I couldn't feel those things, why I couldn't have those experiences. And so what ended up happening was, when I was in college, Just one thought happened of why, what started my deconversion, conversion, and it's a good segue into what I'm talking about, and it was just geography. And why, what do you mean, what am I talking about geography? What makes a person believe what they believe? Why do they believe what they believe? And when you take a look at the billions of people in the world,
yeah,
it boils down to geography.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have
where you're born,
where you're born, and where your parents believe, almost in 100% dictates what you believe. And so I was thinking, if I was born in India, would I still be, you know, would I be a Baptist? Would I be a Jehovah's Witness? No, I would be a Buddhist, or, you know, I'd believe in Hindu. Mm-hmm. If I was in the Middle East, I would, you know, I'd believe in Islam. If I was in Mexico, most likely I'd be, you know, a Catholic. So it all boiled down to, was where I born, you know, if your religion is dictated by where you're born in geography, then why, what makes that true? Why would any of it be true? And I started really thinking about it, and ultimately, after a few more years of just, you know, looking information up online, you know, the internet is just full of wonderful information, I just don't believe, like, there is no need to continue believing these things. And I always thought it was interesting that no one else, you know, the believers now, they don't understand the concept of where they were from or their experiences. They so fervently hold on to their beliefs, but it's just a product of their generation,
yeah,
of their parents, not so much what's true,
their environment
or what evidence. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm, they don't accept that you know, had they been born someone else, they would have a different belief. And that's just, that was one of the easiest things that I thought that led to my deconversion, was just simply thinking, I could have been born somewhere else, pushing just as hard that this is true.
Sure. Growing up in America, though, you've obviously gone through the American education system. Did you attend a public school?
I did, all the way through.
Were you ever taught evolution in public school?
You know what? Probably, if any, it was brief. They touched on, you know, some biology, but they didn't really push.
You heard the concepts. What did you think of that?
You know what? To be honest with you, at the time, you know, I'll tell you a story. So, I was so deep into the Jehovah's Witness thing that I had to give a presentation in speech class. And in speech class, I had to give a presentation.
Oh, did you?
In speech class, and one of the speeches that I chose was to kind of push, you know, my
Jehovah's
belief. Not so much Jehovah's Witnesses, but my particular belief. And on that was on, you know, how a creature could not have not been created. How it had to have been, how by necessity.
Argument from complexity? Maybe?
Yeah, it was. I was talking about the Nautilus and how, you know, we take designs from the Nautilus and things like that. And it was so much complexity, but, you know, I also threw argumentum ad ignorantium, argument from ignorance. How else could this thing have been the way it is had it not been for being created?
Right.
And now thinking about that now, I thought about that actually a year ago. Think about, you know, of course, I was a different mindset. I had a different belief, but thinking about the things I said in that class and all the fallacies I presented to them to justify the belief that I had that this creature had to have been created. So I guess I would have definitely bought into it.
Well, how did that go?
The speech class?
Yeah.
You know,
did you get any reaction or did
I actually
didn't
know I did.
I had a guy
in there. It was very interesting. He asked me and I didn't, I was just so caught up in the, you know, me being nervous in front of the class. He said, where did you find this information? I was like, well, it's in the Bible. And he said, do you have the original one? And I didn't really understand, you know, what he meant at that. So he was definitely pushing back at that, but I guess, you know, he wouldn't.
Was this another student?
It was another student.
Okay. What did your teacher say?
She didn't interject, I guess, you know, there was no.
She was trying to hold a middle ground, I guess.
And so much as she just, I guess that was, you know, she only allowed the one question and comment section. She allowed the one question and then she can see it kind of got silent because, you know, no one else was going to, I guess, it kind of brought a, you know, it made an awkward sense at that point. So, I mean, this is in Texas, but, again, this is in San Antonio, so not the most red area, you know.
Right.
Like, let's say Austin's pretty liberal. I'm not sure what San Antonio is, but, you know, most major cities you find a good mix, so it wasn't, like, hard right.
Yeah.
As far different from what I experienced here today, you know, being an atheist in Tennessee is sometimes difficult, and you always run into the people who are happy to tell you how wrong you are.
Yeah, the first question out of their mouth after they shake your hand and say hello is, where do you go to church? So that, it's just an assumption that you're religious, that you buy into all of the supernatural claims that they buy into. When I was growing up, I was raised for the first 5 years of my life before school in Western Tennessee and Western Kentucky. And then my parents took me to Chicago. And I got a modern education up there until I was about 11. But then we moved back down to Camden, Tennessee, population 2,500.
Okay.
I mean, 8 years later, I graduated in high school with a class of 89. So it was very small.
So you all like went to the same church?
Well, I didn't go to church.
But
my mom was religious. My dad wasn't very religious. But I didn't care for religion. Religious people always had their hand out. They always wanted something from me. They were overly glad to spread the to me, outrageous supernatural tales. I mean, I didn't buy into evolution, but I thought it was an enticing concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we've actually could have evolved on this planet, you know, from earlier life forms. And I could see how it could happen, I guess because of, you know, my influence from Chicago. But I never bought into religion. I never liked it. I believed in God. I believed in heaven and hell, all because my mother was so religious. But I went to the Navy after high school. All the way through the Navy, I was a believer. And I didn't run into an atheist until I went to college after the Navy. I was 22, but that was in 1972.
Sure.
You got to remember, I was born in 1950 and was raised in the 50s. which was a very religious, you know, era. Everybody believed everybody I knew believed in religion.
Yeah, that's when we changed the official motto and started adding in God We Trust to everything.
Right.
Currency and changing our Pledge of Allegiance.
Right.
So I can definitely see that.
Right. But my mom was disenchanted with church. She'd go to church expecting people to act and be like Christ or be Christ-like. Yeah. And nobody was. You know, they always professed to care for people less than them, to be able to give to the poor, to work to help with people, and they didn't. They just went to church, did their little prayers, and then went home and acted like they always did.
Yeah.
So Mom was disenchanted with it, and I didn't have to go, thank goodness, because Mom didn't care for it. So I was just glad that didn't happen, that I didn't have to go. But once I realized that it was an option, not to believe in God, the way you could actually not believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
Because until I went to college, everybody I ever met, you know, from everybody from the school teacher to my neighbors, the government, every level of government professed in belief in God. So, you know how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know better, you feel like you're the outlier. You're the person who's the exception to the rule, the person who's wrong. But now that I've come into a community, and it's been a community that's been around forever. Did you know that Thomas Paine wrote Age of Reason, which basically debunked the Bible? And then there was Robert G. Ingersoll from the Civil War era, who was a traveling speaker who spoke on free thought and atheism.
Sure.
We've had a vibrant community forever, but the religious people would have you not believe that any of that that actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's just such a breath of fresh air to know that some of the greatest thinkers of all of our ages were atheists.
Yeah. It was, I would say, liberating for myself as well when I kind of, hung the hat of the belief in God and has accepted that maybe it's just, there doesn't have to be a creator, There can be existence without the necessity of a deity that's, currently constantly watching what you're doing. And once I, started thinking like there was just simply no evidence that had been presented to me that I could accept that wouldn't work for any other religion that currently exists, because they all kind of use the same arguments, and it all boils down to, which I'm sure has been said multiple times on the show, is they always have to rely on faith.
Right.
Because there's simply nothing else.
Right. And you, if you try to believe in something else, or follow the reasoning that your mind will present to you that, all of this is bull, you get shunned by your church or by your community. You get ousted, in a lot of cases, ousted by your family or refused to let you live under their roofs, as it were. And then it's just a sad situation. It's the bottom of the hour, and we need to do a station identification, play a little song here. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We have, what's your DJ name then?
Deviation.
And I'm Doubter 5. We're going to play a song for you here. It's going to be I Don't Believe in Fairies by Shelly Segal. Or Siegel, and we'll be right back in just a minute.
I don't believe in fairies. I don't believe in ghosts. I don't. Thank you.
behave well. I don't believe in salvation. I don't believe in sin. I don't believe it will be easy, but I believe that reason can win. So when I'm in the dark, I'm not afraid.
Listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Hello and welcome back to the show. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dr. Five, and with us today we have Deviation.
Hello.
You're on the board and vice president of Atheist Society of Knoxville.
Yes, sir.
And tell us what happens during some of these meetups that y'all have. What do y'all do there?
So, the secular community, but anyone is welcome. Mm-hmm. So is any conversation.
Yeah. Now, one thing I like to tell people is that one thing I guarantee is good conversation. If you're at a point in your life where you just can't have a good conversation with somebody without either getting heated or getting a lot of resistance or something, just calm down and we'll talk and we'll have a good time. And all people are welcome, whether you're a believer or not, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. We have over 850 members, and you can find us online at KnoxvilleAtheist.org, or you can go directly to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheist. It's just that simple. As a matter of fact, if you do a Google for Knoxville Atheist, it'll take you there as well. What could be easier? By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to meetup.com and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one, start one. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday at the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also a group called the Sunday Assembly, which sounds like church, I know, and it is kind of a church, but it's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in God, but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They meet once a month on the fourth Sunday, so go to the World's Fair site and look for the International Building, and they meet there, like I say, once a month. This group started in England just a few years ago, but now it's spread all over the world. That's Sunday Assembly. Do a Google on it. And then there's the Secular Student Alliance. We'll be starting up again pretty strong here at the beginning of the school year. They have programs that give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free-thinking, free-thought movement, or would just like to find other free-thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Knoxville Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it most Wednesday nights between 6:30 and 7:30. That's right. It just went off the air, like it does about this time every Wednesday night. Just go to Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192 on Wednesdays at 6:30. And you can watch it, or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. That's community TV, ctvknox.org. You can also find some of their archives of their old shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words: Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV show or the radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup, or the RET meeting, and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. So, getting back to your activism, what made you want to get active and become involved in such a group?
It was actually spawned from a political reason. This was going back to the first election that I actually voted in, and I realized that a lot of the issues that I had aligned with was correlating with my non-belief or my secularism, you know, the social, the supporting the LGBTQ communities, women's rights, and then I was always noticed that it aligned to the other side, how the far right was always pushing against those things that I, as a secularist and humanist, mm-hmm. you know, promoted and supported.
And like so, progress and,
right,
and science.
So
yeah.
It was politically motivated for me to become not just at home, you know, laughing at anti-Jesus memes. I need to come out there and be more part of community. And now taking part in the Secular America Votes to get people registered to vote, because unfortunately laws are being made by people who hold certain beliefs, even though those beliefs cause either harm or hold other groups back and diminish them. And so that's, I think that's the driving factor of my activism, is because I'm seeing a world, or at least in this nation, I'm seeing people who are happy to create laws that harm or otherwise create inequality simply based on the... I'm glad they like a book.
Well, that's kind of a harsh claim. Do you have any particular laws that you would like to say that...
I mean, it was a huge one.
Spurred you?
Yeah, so it was a huge one. It was in, I don't know which one of the Carolinas, but it was the bathroom bill, right? Where they required, the law was that you could only use a bathroom that was assigned to you at birth on your birth certificate, which is very problematic when you see how either masculine and or feminine some of the transgendered can present. Mm-hmm. So that was one of them. There's tons of abortion restrictions that are being passed around the country.
Right. Yeah.
I take a huge issue with, and of course and I voted against the one here in Knoxville when Prop 1 was introduced. I don't know if you remember what Prop 1 was a few years back.
Something against abortion.
So it actually amended the Tennessee Constitution to specifically claim that abortion was not protected by the Tennessee Constitution, or further protected,
right.
Meaning that it resorted back to the Supreme Court ruling of Roe v. Wade, but that also meant that the state could then impose additional restrictions on that. And immediately following that, almost a month after, a bill was introduced to require, I believe, a 72-hour waiting period between the initial meeting to when the procedure can take place. So
by today's standard, isn't that harsh? Because there's so many out there that now that they show that. That was a very small price to pay, just waiting 3 days.
Yeah, that's not the case.
No, nowadays, like there are several states that only have maybe one or two women's clinics in the entire state because they've passed so many laws that made it so hard for doctors to qualify to be able to give abortions.
Right, I was going to say specifically the surgical centers, because a lot of them require that the doctors have admitting privileges to hospitals, and because a lot of hospitals are ran by, religious organizations, then they will not allow those doctors to have admitting privileges,
right.
Ergo shutting those kind of places down. So there are constant laws, and they keep happening, you know, Mike Pence in Indiana. I mean, there are countless things, you know, that are happening that really spurned my activism, my need to be a voice to protect those who are unburdened or, you know, undue inequality is passed upon them because someone has a belief of one thing.
Yeah.
And I'm a fervent defender of the separation of church and state. We have a great local group here, Freedom from Religion Foundation of the East Tennessee chapter. They combat these sort of claims all the time, or these things all the time, where religion encroaches itself into the government,
mm-hmm.
and you know, they're good fighters for that.
Yeah, and they can escalate issues all the way up to the national level if they want to, or if they have a cause. But local people can bring issues to their attention by going to, I think it's East Tennessee FFRF.
What? So the easiest way to find them, to be honest with you, is just going to, if you have social media on Facebook, FFRF ETC or Freedom From Religion Foundation East Tennessee chapter, a quick Google search.
Just message
them. There is a hyphen FFRF-ETC, and just simply messaging them, any one of them will be happy to respond to you and pass that up. Now, mm-hmm. of course, they typically do request that if you are a complainant that you are actually resident of
right.
of mm-hmm. of where you're making the claim.
Right. In other words, if you're trying to make a claim about a teacher teaching the Bible or teaching creationism in the biology class, then you need to have a child in that class that,
right.
to be able to meet the standing level of the local courts and the federal courts.
Right, because we have to bring a complainant
yeah.
aboard, and you simply being an outsider would not qualify as
right.
a complainant.
Now, if, however, you don't have a child in the classroom, or if you know of some violation that's happening and you're not in that particular jurisdiction, you can still contact them, and they will have members in that area that will be able to carry the fight forward. So don't think that you're SOL, basically, out of luck, because you don't have a reason. Well, you haven't met the level of burden of...
Of the harm.
Of harm.
Yeah, harm.
Because there are people being harmed by it. It just may not be you. We just need to know about it.
And one of those that's making its way right now, which was passed and just fiscally irresponsible, was requiring all schools to have a display that is of In God We Trust, publicly posted.
Yeah.
It's a tough battle, this one, and it's one this is one that's not gonna go anywhere
no.
because the Supreme Court did rule that as the official model. But it's still it's more of a slap in the face to the psychic community.
The problem is that needs to be brought to the court as a constitutional violation, being the motto of the United States. Because the United States has a constitution that is basically generally and exclusively secular. And there, it says in the Constitution, second article, first article, that the government cannot be involved in selecting a religion over a non-religion or one religion over another.
Congress shall make no law regarding
right.
the establishment of religion.
So, but these religious congressmen have kowtowed to their base and passed this law in contravention of the Constitution. And that needs to be brought to the Supreme Court. Not just the fact that some departments are putting it on their cars or schools, but the fact that it's our motto to begin with. That's the problem.
Well, maybe a future Supreme Court, you know, the one we have now is packed
yeah,
with the
right wing
that would definitely
evangelicals
further expand their reach.
Catholics,
mm-hmm.
mostly. Anyway, let's not get into the Catholic Church. We can go all the rest of the hour on that.
Yeah, we sure will with that recent grand jury. But this isn't I know we're getting into it, but unfortunately this came out, but this has been going on for longer than I've been alive.
Centuries.
So it's...
Centuries.
It's sad that nothing's been done. And you know what? I don't think I see anything coming out of this either. Except
to get into the details of this particular problem. I mean, this particular case, the problem is widespread, not just in Pennsylvania, but all over the country and all
sure.
over the world, anywhere there's a Catholic church. And I believe anywhere there's a church, because people in power who have that kind of power to say that they know what God wants you to do can certainly take a minor who doesn't have the level of intellect to be able to challenge them and make them do whatever they want to in the name of God.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many people take advantage of that. And we've got to watch out for it. We've got to eliminate it wherever we can.
But, I mean, that's just the basis of religion, right? Just taking advantage of
right.
the weaker, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
especially...
And controlling them.
Controlling. And so, That's actually a great. Have you ever seen the movie called The Book of Eli?
No, I don't think I have.
So, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it. The Book of Eli stars a man who has to carry this tome, and we don't know what the tome is until much later. But when it gets revealed what the tome is, and the guy who was trying to get it from it is revealed that it is the last remaining Bible. And the man who...
Is this a futuristic tale?
Yes, okay. Yes. Almost apocalyptic in nature.
Okay.
And when he discovers what the book is, he says, "Do you understand how powerful this is? This is power. This is control. This is how you control your people." And I always thought that was like a nice little quip towards it, because it really is control, and it's really just preying on those who are looking for, you know, a way out, a better way of life, and
taking
most likely in desperation. You look at the, especially in poorer populations, where they have the seed faith, where they'll, you know, you, I don't remember the term of the type of the preaching they do, but essentially they'll have their congregation put a donation. They'll tell them, you know, don't spend the money you have on groceries.
Oh, a faith seed? A seed?
Yeah. So, you know, you put that towards...
Prosperity gospel.
Prosperity, thank you. Prosperity gospel, where you know, don't put that to, you know, you'll have that to save for next month. Give it to God, and He will give back to you tenfold.
Yeah.
And it's just praying on the weekend.
And of course, somebody in the congregation will have some good luck that month or whatever, and they will receive a bonus at work or something like that. And they'll bring them up on stage and say, "See, it works."
Sure.
Where 90%, 95% of the congregation is facing real financial harm now that they've taken their money and given it to the church.
Yeah. I'm not sure if we're allowed to give plugins for online media on the show here.
Sure.
But John Oliver did a great skip on that.
Oh, yeah. He started his own church.
Mm-hmm. But he did a great, but the main bit of that on what they do and the real harm they do is actually a great look. So if you get look up Prosperity Gospel, it's a short video by John Oliver. It really is eye opening to really what is happening across America that, I mean, people tend to ignore because, you know, that's just the church being the church.
Yeah.
And, you know,
that's giving to God. Like, it reminds me of the time back in the 60s, I mean, sorry, 70s, when you have these TV evangelists that everybody just knew they were crooked and faking in all this money. But there were people that didn't know they were crooked, and they were just sending them millions of dollars. And, of course, I cited the 70s, but it's been going on since the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Sure.
Although it's still going on right now. Mm-hmm. And they're taking financial advantage of the old, the weak, and the infirm, who have very little money, but they get their money anyway, and they have very little qualms about taking it, and it's ruining people's lives.
Well, just think about how many millions it cost the Catholic Church to not only move those priests around, to keep them hidden, but to, I mean, just, it was probably millions. And because, and so here's a fun fact, when we took Aid Society of Knoxville and made them 501c3, I had to do a lot of research on what it takes and what we have to do as an organization to maintain that status. And one of the things we have to do is we have to do an annual reporting. It's a form that must be submitted either electronically or by mail to the IRS. Now, most organizations are required to do this or they will lose their tax-exempt status.
Funny enough,
there's only one exception. One does not have to submit any kind of report for their doings, and those are churches. That is the easiest way to become tax-exempt and to have your money not monitored. Not a single report has to be submitted.
Yeah, and even if you violate the rules of the IRS, the evangelicals and religious right employees of the IRS, because there are a lot of very conservative religious folks in the IRS.
Sure.
Will not pursue the errors that you're doing in the name of the church. They're on your side, basically.
So are you talking about preaching from campaign endorsement, things like that, where they've been done in the past?
No, I'm just talking about generally when the IRS, if somebody calls the IRS and tells them about a violation that they know some church is doing, they either will like poo-poo it or not look at it, or if they do look at it, they just give them a check off and let them go. It's just the religion has the upper card in today's society, and that includes all the way up through the religious parties, both religious parties, and the establishments of government.
Right, and I know, speaking of establishment of government, I don't know how tinted political you get, but I know that the Johnson Amendment is one of the things they're trying to repeal, which is,
I'm a political science major, so
sure. So they're trying to, attempts have been made to repeal the Johnson Amendment, which, for those who don't know, is basically that a 501c3 organization cannot, especially churches, cannot endorse a political candidate for office. Mm-hmm. And
without losing their tax exempt status.
Now, a lot of churches have done this in the past anyways, and I kind of had a pet theory on this, is that they're wanting the IRS to take action, because at that point they can take it to the Supreme Court and try to get this Supreme Court to overrule that, right, as a First Amendment
now
violation.
Now that they'll have, mostly conservative people on
religious conservative people. I think in this upcoming election, and especially being emboldened by the 2016 results, the 2018, especially even 2020, we're going to see a lot of churches, and even do it more so publicly, because either they know, A, that the IRS will do nothing about it, and or B, they will get the Supreme Court to do their do their ruling for them.
And in this scenario, when if the case changes because Trump has not been allowed to keep his office for whatever reason, well, we will now have Pence, who's an even worse, more evangelical Christian than Trump.
And I think even more harmful. I don't remember the damage that he caused in Indiana. The AIDS kind of breakout because the some of the rollbacks of the legislation they had there. I'm not sure how many more outbreaks they had because some of the legislation that he pushed through. Based on his religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
This is real harm for real people. They didn't have access, that would have otherwise had access to the care or preventative that they needed to prevent that disease.
Yeah, so many people ask me when I tell them I'm an atheist and I start talking against it, they ask me point blank, what do you got against the religion? I mean, you give so many people hope. My answer is because... religion causes real harm in the world.
Sure.
I mean, that's just a short little sentence. But if we could go into the harm that religion has
been causing. That's a whole new show right there.
It is. We've spent whole shows on that particular topic.
Sure.
But, I've got a chapter in my book and a chapter on the website, digitalfreethought.com, by the way, about the harm that religion has done in the world. Matter of fact, I was in the closet, an atheist closet. I was a non-believer in a believer's world, but I had to pass as a believer for like 30 years before I came out in 2001.
Imagine having your atheist views when you're in the Navy, though, because
I was a believer in the Navy.
Right.
It wasn't until I got to the...
I've heard, that military members find it especially hard.
Yeah, they do. I wouldn't know. I wasn't an atheist in the service,
sure,
but I've read accounts of people who are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to publicly, because the repercussions that you could face. I mean,
well, some of your branches of the service are even more evangelical, religious than others.
Sure.
Air Force, for instance, is a very religious organization. Especially their academy. If you go in there as an atheist, you may very well not make it through the academy because they have such rigor in trying to convert you to religion while you're in there. But that's the way it goes. So you want to tell people about when the meetup is and when they can join?
Sure. So there's several ways, as we mentioned earlier, there's several ways you can find us on information about not only this show, but our TV show. A lot of information is found on our website, KnoxvilleAtheist.org. There is a link to our meetup, links to the fan-uploaded pages to the TV show, as well as a link to this radio show. You can also contact us there if you're interested in any of our projects that we're ongoing.
You
can find us on Facebook. We have our public page. We also have, like I said, our very large meetup that you can find. Check us out. Come down and see us. We're at Barley's. We'll be there. A lot of us get there at 5, but the official meetup time is around 5:30. And sometimes, we'll be in conversation. We'll stay there for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, cold beer, good food, and great conversation.
We have
a large table. Mm-hmm. Our average attendance is, ranges from around, on average 20 to 24. We've seen it as high as 27 or even more. So if you're... If you're a newly out atheist, a secret atheist, that wants to be out, just a little secular
or just somebody who's interested.
Or even, do you want to come out and have a conversation with an atheist? We'd be happy to talk to you. Come out. We've had a preacher come out before.
Yeah.
So they'll come on out. We have a large group who would love to welcome you and have you out there. Like I said,
don't expect to be able to proselytize to us.
Yeah, don't preach.
Because most of us have been through religion, got the T-shirt, been there. We're not interested in hearing it.
We're probably also really good at counter apologetics.
So
we'd be happy to come out.
Yeah, if you think you've got a good apologetic that you think you can defend, bring it.
Yeah, hey, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we meet downtown Barley's. Taproom Pizzeria. Mm-hmm. So meet down there at 5:30 every Tuesday. Find us on Meetup and on Facebook.
Okay. We've got about 1 minute before I have to start the music. Any final words that you'd like to pass along?
Those who are interested in some of our projects that I mentioned earlier, the Secular America Votes or our Ending Hunger campaign, go to either our Facebook or our website, nonphilatheist.org. The information is there. The partners and affiliates that we're working with, we really would like to get as many of the community involved to reach our goals so we can feed, like I said, we're creating 10,000 meals for our local Knoxville, neighbors. So once we get that goal, we'd love to have volunteers to help put those food bags together and to help distribute. It's going to take a lot of volunteers for that, but first we need to hit our goal. So you can go on Facebook, find us, Google, and our website, knowledgeplatheist.org/projects, to get involved in that.
Yeah, very good. So, Deviation.
Deviation.
I enjoyed the show.
Thanks so much for having me on. Well,
my pleasure. And this is Doubter 5. Remember that everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't sweat it. And we'll see you next week, 7 o'clock, same station. Talk to you later. Bye.